stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Sean. Nice to be here.
Oh, pleasure to have you. It sounds like you're the guy to talk to when we're dealing with these sort of areas. First of all, when we're looking at this foreign aid cuts, who are the biggest losers when it comes to the overall cutting of the overseas aid program?
Well, obviously the world's poor are the biggest losers. There's a 10% reduction in aid spending in real terms from between the last Labor budget of 2012-13 and over the next couple of years to 2015-16. So there's $7.6 billion going to be cut over the next 5 years to the budget. I'll be fair and say that the government has done its best to cut carefully, as it were. They've cut from countries far away, Latin America, Africa, countries within these continents, so that's where they've been pulling back from, and they've tried to avoid cuts to our near neighbours. And in fact, actually, Papua New Guinea's actually seen an increase, which is linked to the Manus Island Detention Centre, sort of additional funds to help support programs around that.
Of course. As you mentioned there, they're cutting very, very carefully with some of these programs. What are some of the programs that Australia will actually be continuing on rather than the ones that they will be cutting?
Right, so actually a lot of the bilateral programs are continuing. So Australia delivers its aid both bilaterally, which means directly running projects in tandem with the recipient government, and they also run projects via big international organisations like the Asian Development Bank, via the UN, and so on. Mm-hmm. So where the really big cuts are coming are in the international organisation funding. Now, this may on the face of it seem, well, you know, isn't it better that Australia has direct control of its aid spending? You could argue that. On the other hand, some of these international organisations have very, very good expertise in parts of the world that are not directly in our neighbourhood. And so, in a sense, it's a lost opportunity to pull back from funding these big organisations, given that their expertise is so valuable in certain areas of the world.
So tell me this also, how does the system of measuring aid as a percentage of gross national income work? And why has the government opted to stop using that system? Because I can't say I was actually aware we were using it to begin with.
Right, so all the way back in 1969, would you believe, there was something called the Pearson Commission, which led into a discussion at the UN General Assembly. And this commission established that 0.7% of gross national income, which is very similar to GDP, that 0.7% was sort of the ideal amount of money from the developed world to basically fulfill a funding gap for the developing world. Now, the thing is, this was done all the way back in the late 60s, right? So whether it's really relevant in actual terms now is very, very debatable. But what it has been is it's been a rallying cry for anyone who's an advocate of aid to say, well, hang on, everyone committed back in 1970 to achieving this goal. Now, the reality is that very few countries have ever reached it.
Mm-hmm.
And Australia is one of those, but we've never reached it. We're around about in the middle of the pack, a little bit lower than the middle of the pack when it comes to our percentage of GNI, contribution to aid. Now, delinking it from a percentage of gross national income is not in itself a bad thing, but whether you then decide to link it to just inflation, as the government had initially planned to do, they've now actually reneged on that particular promise. The original promise had been to at least keep the budget constant in real terms for aid. They've since said, no, we're going to cap it in just nominal terms, meaning that when you adjust for inflation, it goes backwards. So the question is, should they be using inflation as the alternative? I mean, that really just keeps it constant. You really need to be thinking about what's the appropriate level of aid given the needs of the countries in our community and what's reasonable for Australia to be contributing.
And as you mentioned there, we've never actually made that 0.7% of gross national income to begin with.
But 0.7%.
0.7, sorry.
0.7%. It's about less than $1 in every $200 of GDP.
Yeah, we've never sort of reached that to begin with. But will Australia, with this nominal cap, this $5 billion cap, will it continue to meet its obligations to various poorer countries that was agreed on a great deal of time ago? But will it continue to sort of reach these kind of obligations?
Well, it depends what you mean by obligations. I mean, in terms of its bilateral project funding, so country-to-country funding of projects, it will do a reasonable job of continuing most of those programs, but its funding of multilateral institutions has dropped away absolutely dramatically. So, in a sense, they're keeping their country-to-country commitments, but they're not keeping their commitment to the country via a third agent, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So, you know, obviously this means there's going to be real cuts to programs in the regions that we've previously supported, you know, real cuts. And the obligation, you have to think about it in terms of not just a, well, we said we'd do this, you know, will we be able to continue doing this? It's also about an ethical obligation. It's about, you know, should Australians be supporting the world's poorest, you know, to avoid starvation, disease, poverty, and so on? Or can we relax that commitment somewhat?
Mm.
Now, that's a very difficult question to say, well, what's the number that allows us to feel not only good about ourselves, but, you know, maintain the commitments that we've actually said we would.
Mm. Well, Michael, thank you very much for joining us on The Daily this morning. Do appreciate your insight into this topic, because it is not just a social one, but an economic one as well.
Not a problem. Happy to help you.